Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Kristen and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 159 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stufko.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to 159, the Vision Board Podcast. TK, who we got?
We got Tony Jeffries, man. Tony, boy. Yeah, Tony's doing some great things. I love his voice. He's an English boy, so I love English people. They really resonate. I've got a lot of English friends. Dieran, for example, if he's listening, he's reminds me a lot of Dieran.
Yeah, do we have an interpreter for this one? Or
potentially. No, I think he might have a go at a few of you Yanks.
Or, yeah, man. It's awesome. This is a cool thing about this. We got an American, we got an Aussie, we got a Brit. And this guy's Olympian, host, traveler, coach, the list goes on and on.
Yeah, to give you guys insights, Tony was a professional boxer. He's got a very, very successful gym in California. In Santa Monica has also got a spot. What's his new spot, Johnny?
Where is
Inglewood? No, not Inglewood.
It's in Brentwood.
Brentwood, sorry.
Yeah, and you guys familiar with the Brentwood area. That's where the high and almighty of the LA social scene lives. Yep. And, you know, his circle of influence, his network, I'm sure we'll get into it in this episode. Tony's a guy we've been wanting to sit down with for a while.
Yeah, if you're a fan of The Fighter and Kid, Tony's generally on a lot on Brennan Schaub's spin-off show, The Big Brown Breakdown. He's virtually his boxing analyst because Tony was his coach for the last three of Brennan's fights, which he was a very successful fighter as well. So
yeah, the Mitrione fight, the Travis Brown fight, the Arlovsky fight, and we're going to get into the mindset of coaching, the mindset of fighting, the business side of things. Absolutely. Like you said, this guy is really one of these people that has been able to figure out the equation of their body of work and then continually being able to double down on it.
Yeah, just a quick apology early on. There's just a few audio issues early. Unfortunately, the fire alarm was going off, so we got delayed a little bit on our end, and then one of Tony's computers fried up in the sun or something like that. So the first 15 minutes or so, it's a bit of a drop-in, drop-out situation, but we then swapped rooms and so did he, and the audio cleared up for that last kind of 20, 25 minutes. So, yeah, we had a great chat, and I'm really excited to bring it to you.
No adversity that we can't handle. You guys stick, be patient. It's a good one, and Tony Jeffries is one of these people that you can learn from, so we're stoked to get him on.
Definitely. Guys, a big shout-out before we get Tony on the show. Thank you for leaving all the messages of support. Leave us those five-star reviews on iTunes that really help us grow and reach more people. So just a big shout-out to you, and thank you.
Yeah, and you know, we really love the feedback. We really love the messages we get, guys, on all the social platforms, whether it's Insta or emails. Keep tuning in. Keep giving us that feedback. That's how we grow, and it really means a lot to myself and Tristan, so we say thank you.
Mm-hmm. So without further ado, here is Tony Jeffries. Guys, our special guest is Tony Jeffries. Tony is the co-founder of one of California's best gyms, Box and Burn. Born and bred in northeast England, Tony won a bronze medal at the 2008 Olympic Games in Beijing. While also due to injury, he had to retire, but he was undefeated as a professional boxer with a record of 9 wins, 0 losses, and 1 draw. We welcome the incredible Tony Jeffries. Tony. Welcome,
thank
man.
You for having me, boys. Thank you for having me. And you just said they're one of the best gyms in California. It's the best gym in California. Sorry, not one of them. Come on, mate.
Yeah, you got to be, Tristan, you got to be more specific. Tony, man, thank you for stopping by the Vision Board. Tristan and I have been watching you for a while now. Like he said, Olympian. You know, aren't you from Sun? Did you grow up in Sunderland?
Sunderland, yeah. Yeah. Sunderland's my hometown.
And now you're in LA doing your thing, man. You're popping up on the most popular podcasts. Your circle of influence is something to be admired. Talk a little bit about what you were drawn into, you know, Southern California, and what your like growth there has been like, your rise.
Yeah, well, like you said, 9-1 on my record. I just like to tell people I was undefeated in 10 fights. Don't like to tell them about that 1-1. But yeah, so as a professional boxer, I started my career in England after the Olympics, and I changed trainers after I had that draw, that fight, and I come to California to seek out one of the best trainers in the world, which is called Tommy Brooks. Yeah. And Tommy trained Amanda Holyfield at the time in a place in California called Torrance, not far from LA. So that's how I got here. And I got here and I fell in love with Los Angeles, and me and my wife decided, let's just move here. So we moved here. And then I had three fights training. I trained in America for my last three pro fights, fought back in England on Army fights were televised on live TV, so that was great. So I fought in England. And then due to hand injuries, I ended up having to retire. And while I was waiting for my hands to get better, I thought they were going to get better. I was going to continue fighting. By then, I'd moved to California, and I loved it. And I love it. I still love it now out here.
You coming from the north of England, I know a lot of people from that area, and they're very family orientated. So was it very, very hard to leave your family behind and have to start again in California?
Not really, because of now we've got the likes of, when I'm speaking to you, when you're in Australia, I'm in Los Angeles, we've got the likes of Skype, FaceTime, and so many other ways with Facebook and to connect with your family. So it was fine, you know. I was all good with that. And I mean, my family come and visit us, so it's like a holiday for them to come and see me. So that was fine. That was fine. Moving away.
Tony,
obviously, I missed the banter with my friends. Can you hear me, all right?
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, see, I missed the banter with my friends because although I've been in America now for like 5 years, it's just not the same with these Yanks. I don't know. I was even more like the Brits, but it's not the same with the Yanks. You know, I've got some American friends, but I missed the banter with the English boys.
Let's talk about the culture in the gym. So what were some big differences when you left England training with those guys, your sparring partners, and you got to California? Were there any big outstanding differences in the way they trained and the way the culture is in the gym?
As a professional fighter, you're talking, right?
Yeah, as a fighter.
I remember when I first came to America, it was like a scene of Rocky when he walks into Apollo Creed's gym and he's the only white man. I was the only white man, and all these black guys were all staring at us. Like, they were all heavyweights as well. There was a program on there. They're all staring at us. I was like, oh shit, I was a bit intimidated. But everyone was cool. And then when I started sparring as well, everyone just tried to take your foot off. It was like a fight where every time you had sparred. So that kind of brought the best out of me in a fighter, you know? And because I was sparring with Tommy Brooks, a trainer who I highly respected, he really got some good work on me, the best out of me. So yeah, I mean, it was good. It was good, but not until I retired from boxing and started teaching boxing, I kind of realized that I should have been doing things differently, that most of the training that I was doing wasn't great training. I should have been doing training smarter and better, you know?
Anything specific
that you wanted to change up? Because like I told you before the show, I was listening to you and Jay speak a lot, and you were speaking that you did no strength conditioning work at all. You were literally doing a lot of long runs and your traditional boxing stuff. If you could go back, what would you change, Tony?
I didn't do any strength and conditioning work. I would like to do some more speed and agility work when I've done any of that stuff. More explosive strength work. Would have done a little bit of that, but as well with the boxing style, like, as a pro, I was a world class amateur winning the Olympic bronze medal. I was on an amateur boxing program for 8 years. And with that, we concentrate on our fast feet and our defense and counter punching and all that. But as a pro, working with all these pro trainers, it's more like planting your feet and just seeing who's the toughest and the strongest in it, you know? And that there wasn't really my style. I should have been concentrating more on moving my feet and concentrating on more of the stuff that got me the Olympic bronze medal, rather than working more on being macho man and being the toughest fighter, because that's what a lot of pros do. Like, who's the toughest in there, who can take the best punch and land the best punch. So I kind of went away from my successful amateur background and went towards more of this flat-footed style, which didn't suit us, you know. But not a trainer's taught us that, so. You know, I would have worked a lot more on like I said, the footwork and agility stuff.
Tony, in the most recent times at the Olympic boxing, there's been some very controversial rule changes. What's your opinion on some of those rule changes, specifically the headgear and things like that?
Yeah, I really believe that we should have headgear in amateur boxing for a number of reasons. A big reason is that it's bad for boxing because guys get more cuts. Because if you've got head guards on and your heads clash, your heads will kind of bounce off each other a little bit, you know, for the most part. Now, if your heads clash, you're going to get a cut and you're going to be bloody. And when boys ask you this question, if you're a parent and you, or let's say, if you're not familiar with amateur boxing, where will you watch it? The only place that you're going to watch amateur boxing is either, will you tell me?
Well,
at the gym.
Yeah, at the gym, yeah.
Well, not the gym, like on TV. You're gonna watch it in the Olympics.
Olympics, yeah. Commonwealth Games, Olympics.
And the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. And now you're watching boxing and you're seeing guys get cut because the cuts happen all the time now. If you're a parent and you're not going to put your kid into a sport, you're not going to put them into this sport now where you got kids have got bloody blood running down their faces. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of...
Yeah, so, I mean, that... Sorry, go on.
No, you go on.
Yeah, so that's a big reason, because it's bad for boxing. Now, parents not putting their kids into the sport because people are getting cut through no head guards. And now another big reason is you get more hand injuries because now you're not just punching a padded head guard, you're punching a real hard skull. Mm. And with amateur boxing, the hand wrap rule, I can't remember the length, but I think it might have been 110. Don't quote me on that, but it's a lot less than the pros. So now you're wearing really little hand wraps, but you're punching a hard skull, so your hands will get ruined in there. So that's another big reason as well.
Yeah, in terms of mental toughness, Tony, like I was watching yesterday, I was watching your fight where you had that draw against Ben Buller, and that final round is brutal, man. Like he drops you a couple times and... You know, it's pretty obvious, you know, you were ahead for most of the fight, but that last round, he really came back and he stung your heart and it showed a lot of guts on your part to keep getting up and to finish that fight. Where did that side of things come from, man?
Well, I'm glad you asked me this because that's one of the only videos of me fighting on YouTube. I've been trying to get it removed for ages, but I can't. So what happened in that fight, right? This is how crooked promoters are. So I was... When I fought in my hometown, Sunderland, I used to sell a shit ton of tickets, like so many tickets. Anyway, so the promoter put the event in Sunderland, and I had to pull out because I was 8 weeks before the fight, or 6 weeks before the fight, I couldn't spar. I had an injured arm, I couldn't spar, so I said, mate, I'm pulling out the fight. He said, oh, come on, Tony, you're fighting this journeyman. I went, well, I've never fought 8 rounds before. I don't want to fight. And I said, I've got injured, you know, I've done live on TV. Oh, come on, I went, no, I'm not sparring. Anyway, so he persuaded me to fight if it was going to be a 6-round fight. So I went, all right, I'll fight for 6 rounds. I'll beat this kid for 6 rounds. So I got in there, he's a tough journeyman. Then after the 6th round, I went to the referee to raise my hand, and he said, you've got 2 rounds left. So me, on my camp, no one knew it was an 8-round fight until after the 6th round.
Jesus.
Wow. So I won 4 out of the first 6 rounds. I fight about the first 6 rounds. Then it's kind of like, I know you boys work out, if you run a 6 mile run as fast as you can, and then you get the finish line exhausted, and they said, oh no, you've got 2 more miles left.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what? I cannot physically do it. And that's what happened there. I couldn't physically do another 2 rounds, but it was the only thing I had to do. I never got dropped. I fell over a few times. I had exhaustion. So I never fought 8 rounds before. So now the promoter after the fight, he thought that I was just going to stop this guy. Well, I never. But it just shows how sneaky and horrible and crooked boxing can be. Because I was so close to getting hurt. And that there really made me dislike professional boxing and promoters as well.
Could you share some insights with us a little about the, you know, what the coaching aspect of things? Like, what is maybe some of your favorite things about? Are you developing younger guys? Are you coaching like pros? Talk a little bit about where your favorite spot is with the coaching side of things.
Right now, I just train people for fitness, and I'm not training that many people as it is. I trained a UFC guy, Brendan Sharp. I know you're both familiar with Brendan. I trained him for his last 3 UFC fights. I was a head trainer. And then after that, I didn't want to train any more athletes or any more fighters. I'm concentrating more
on the business. I've got like 30 trainers work for me now, and doing an education program, the Boxing Brown Academy. So yeah, that's where I am now, rather than boxing or fighters.
Yeah, Tony, you mentioned you training Brendan. In terms of, you know, I'm sure that would have been a pretty big commitment. What was that like? Was that like a full-time gig at the time?
Yeah, it was. At first, it was just hold some mitts for him. We'd do some boxing work with him. And then me and Brendan clicked really well. Like, we'd become like best friends. And I was like, who's designing your camp? Your training camp? I'll do all my stuff. I said, you should get one of the guys to be your head trainer. He's like, oh, well, I'd like you to be head trainer. I was like, I can't commit to it because I've got James in. So anyway, yeah, he paid me a lot of money, and I started really set training for all these sessions, and I started to study the game because I wasn't that familiar with MMA, and because I was working with him, I studied the game, I'm obsessed with it, and that's kind of why I didn't want to continue to train people, because I get pretty obsessed with it. And so I had these last three fights, and it was a great experience. I mean, being in the corner with him. I mean, the first fight, the headline was John Jones versus Gustafsson when he fought Matt McBrayon.
Yeah,
well. That's what I was in. I was there all these pay-per-view events. It was great for me as a, not just a trainer, but as a person to have this experience. But yeah, it was great. It was a great challenge and something completely different.
How does it feel when, like, for example, Brennan's last fight, he fought Travis Brown? When you see someone like your friend get seriously hurt into a fight, like, how do you handle that mental side of things?
Yeah, you know, before his fight, I got more nervous than he did because I was very close. We were like brothers, we were very close with him every day. It was tough, but before that fight, I was more confident with Brendan beating Travis Brown than I was with Andrei Arlovski or the Matt McBrayon fight.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought I would have bet my car that he would have won the fight, and unfortunately he got caught with the uppercut that put him down, and then, you know, then Travis got on his back. But yeah, it was tough for me because we worked together for like 12 weeks specifically for Travis Brown. So to come to the end of it and get it over within like 4.5 minutes, it was difficult, you know, but it was difficult for him as well. Yeah, it was a hard time, but again, it's all these experiences, you know.
Yeah, Tony, you mentioned earlier that you have, you know, 30, you know, all the trainers working under you. You got, you know, another gym now. A lot of our listeners are coaches, and some of them are business and gym owners. Could you give us some business advice? Maybe an important lesson you've learned in the last year or so in terms of growing a business.
Yes, mate. So, do what you do best and hire for the rest. I know it's a famous quote, but I think figure out what you're really good at and do that, and then get other people. You know, when we first opened, I was trying to design flyers on Photoshop and do all sorts of kind of shit, which I'm not that good at, you know. But as soon as I start hiring people, you know, that really helped me. And then, like, hiring assistants. I think even if you think you can't afford an assistant, I think you should really reach out and stretch it and get an assistant. Because as soon as you get an assistant, they're going to free up so much more of your time to do the stuff that you're good at.
Yeah.
As soon as I got an assistant, my life changed drastically for the better, and I started earning more money, giving her the tasks that I wasn't really good at. And then systems. I think if you've got a fitness business, you need to have systems in place for everything, from the desk girls when coming, what to do, the trainers that have got a step in their career. I've got so much shit that I'm talking about right now with business. You know, so systems is massive. When we start putting systems in place rather than just free-for-all, and that really helps. Like, hiring people, spending the money, hiring people on your team is massive. At one time, I didn't want to spend anything, but as soon as I start spending money on hiring, like, an accounts manager, we start making more money. Hiring a facility manager, we start making more money because we weren't doing the stupid shit that they do. Well, that's not stupid shit, but it's the shit that we're not good at. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. What about...
And we concentrate on the stuff that we do ourselves.
Hey, Tony, I know you've interviewed Dan Pena, and obviously he's a billionaire, man. Like, that would have been an incredible experience. Was there anything from Dan that really got you going in terms of the business world?
No, I think I've interviewed a few people on my podcast now, and, when you're interviewing people, it's harder to really get stuff. I feel, you tell me, it's hard to get stuff from them. When you watch stuff back, you get stuff off them. What I got from Dan was how he used to motivate himself. He used to go around Rolls Royce and sit in the cars, and that's what he used to see, and that used to really motivate him to do better, That sort of shit I like from Dan, but yeah, I mean, he's a big personality, and he came to the gym, and he's a big fella. Have you seen the size of him?
Yeah, he's a monster. When he was in his 60s, he was bodybuilding.
Yeah, he's a big fella, and he can speak a lot, and yeah, I mean, he's successful. He's doing what he does. But I asked him on the podcast. I went, because they call him the $50 billion man.
Yeah.
And his big thing is he turned $800 into $450 million.
Jesus.
So I asked him, how much of that $450 million have you got left? And he went all and he stuttered a little bit. So I was thinking, are you the gazillionaire that people think you are, or what? Or are you just a good talker?
Yeah, so with your gym, with your show, with all of your network and all, you doing interviews like this, what sort of advice would you give to Tristan and myself and anyone listening about compartmentalizing your time or being able to use your time more efficiently?
Well, I think getting their assistant is a big one, so you can get her or him to do a lot of work for you. And then I think as well, what I used to do, I used to put things into me. I used to have a to-do list where I'd write stuff in my notes. I kind of scrapped that to-do list,
yeah.
And now I put that stuff into my calendar. So, I'm sure you boys know, shit never gets done when you put in a to-do list. Mm-hmm. But if you put a space, a time aside just to do that errand or whatever it may be, that chore or work, whatever it may be, that frees up a lot of time. Do you know what that makes sense?
Yeah, it does. Because I was listening to when you were speaking on Jay's show about when you started the Box and Burn Academy. And I think one of Brendan's friends gave you some advice about how you start it. And he said that just, make sure you advertise it, say that you're going to do it. And then within 8 days, you had it ready.
Yeah. But put pressure on yourself. And if you're thinking about doing something, there's so many reasons why not do stuff. I think that's one of the biggest things with success. People are afraid of failing because they put themselves up and say, I can't do it because this might happen. But I just see you put the pressure on yourself. When we started the Boxing Burn Academy, our education program, like you said, I called Matt Easton, who's got loads of gyms, and he's from Denver, he's a jiu-jitsu guy. And he told me about this, start their academy to find fear. He said, when you come off the front of me, announce it. And you'll and put the pressure on yourself to get it done. So I did that, and I had 8 weeks to do this full curriculum for a Boxing Academy. But I put the pressure on myself, kind of like we're talking about Jay Ferrugia. I went to lunch with him yesterday, and he was talking about how I can expand my business. He was giving us some advice, and he said, you need to speak to Luca, his friend Luca Hart, conference his last name, starts with H. He said, speak to Luca. I'll call him tomorrow. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll text him and tell him after me bad lunch, you'll call him today. And I'm like, oh, shit. So, like, that sort of shit, putting pressure on yourself. So he texts Luca telling him I was going to call him to get this business advice off him. So I had to call him. And that made me more productive. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Tony, so Tristan and I off air before we got on the air with you, we were talking about success, and we were just conversing back and forth on specifically social media and people with big followings equating success to their followers with like cars and money and mansions. And then Tristan and myself have conversations with guys like yourself who equate success to like ideas or an intrinsic emotion that's already within us. So what would you equate success to? How would you define it? And what does success mean to you?
So success is, to me, is doing what you love. Like, I can't wait to get up and go to work on the morning. Like, it's the best thing. I would rather go to work than go on vacation. So to me, I'm successful, not because I'm a millionaire or rich, because I'm not, because I love it. That means I'm successful. And if anyone out there is listening and they do what they love, they're winning, they've won, you know, you've won. But we see all the time people posting stuff on Instagram about the mansions and all that. I mean, as long as they're happy, they've won. You know, I remember I went back home to England last year and I went into a local supermarket called Morrison's. And there was a guy stacking shelves. And I was like, this guy stacking shelves, he's about 45 years old. I was like, fucking hell, that's his shit life. But then he turned around, someone asked him a question, he turned around, and he had a big smile on his face, and he looked so happy, and then he took them somewhere. And I was thinking, do you know what? That guy smashed it, because, yeah, he might work 9 to 5. He's got, at least he knows how much money he's getting each week, at least he knows when he's going to see his kids, at least he knows when he can go on holiday. He'll probably go home, obviously see his wife and his love of life. And then I'm thinking, at the time, I'm working paycheck to paycheck. I'm taking all these risks. I don't know if the business is going to work. I'm working 16 hours a day. I'm thinking, hang on a minute, do I understand I need to stack shelves or what? But then, at the same time, it's like, as long as he's happy, and I'm happy what I'm doing, which I am now, you know, life's good. So that guy might be successful as well because he's happy. That makes sense. I keep saying, does that make sense? Because I'm not sure if you understand my accent.
No, we've got a lot of English friends.
Yeah, there, it's very clear.
Yeah, good.
We love the English room.
We love the Aussies.
Tony, what are some of the stuff, you know, we spoke about being happy and things like that, and it's pretty obvious you love what you do. You know, you've got a great business, great family, but what are some of the great things that away from work that really make you happy, man?
What makes me happy is actually work. I'm not just bullshitting that. I love coming to work. But I mean, away from work, I like to do things like, I like to travel, I like to ski. But now we're boxing, burn certification courses, where we teach people how to teach boxing, personal trainers and fitness and things like that. Like next year, like I said, years before we started recording, we're looking at coming to Melbourne and Sydney. And I'm so excited for that. Like, that's something that really, really gets me going and really motivates us, because now I'm traveling, which I love, and I'm working as well, you know, so that sort of shit I really love. Yeah.
I watch, sometimes it'll be late at night and I'll send videos to Tristan of Vasily Lomachenko. Just, I'll go down that rabbit hole of Lomachenko, just watch his movement, watch his sparring, how he fights. What's your opinion on, if, like, when I watch Vasily, I feel like we're watching boxing evolving, like, in that moment. You said that your style had changed. You were fighting flat-footed when you came over. Do you have a favorite style? Would you recommend a young kid listening to fight like Lomachenko or fight like the traditional way?
I think with Lomachenko, he's kind of a one-off, right? Is he? I mean, there's a few good fighters coming through with, like, football and that. I mean, like, in the UFC, you've got, Dillashaw and then Dominic Cruz. If you want to call them similar to a crazy footwork, if there's a young upcoming fighter, I mean, figure it out. I think do what you're comfortable at. There's a guy from my hometown called Josh Kelly who he used to box as a kid. He boxed with his hands down, and people would say, "You're crazy, you need to put your hands up." And he never did it. And now he qualified for the Olympics, and he went to Rio in 2016. He never medaled, but now he's a professional, and he's smashing it, and he's still got the same style. He found out what worked for him. It just so happens his hands are down, he's flash, he's flashy, he's punching off. So I think do what works for you. And I mean, if you can fight like that, but I mean, I would not recommend going in the gym and trying everything Lomachenko does. I mean, try it, but I wouldn't try and do it all the time. It doesn't work, you know.
Did you see the video of Lomachenko and Dillashaw sparring?
I heard about it. Brendan was telling me about it. I never seen it.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, what would you say? Because you know, right now the whole MMA boxing thing is a hot topic. What would you say though to somebody who would just give an MMA fighter a victory before they would fight a boxer? Like you've trained both. You were in Shop's Corner and you were an Olympian boxer. Talk a little bit about the similarities and some of the biggest like differences between the best boxers and the best mixed martial artists.
I think footwork is massive. If you look at all the best mixed martial artists and look at all the best boxers, it all starts with the feet, with the defense, with the movement. Even Lomachenko's feet are amazing. And then you look at the likes of Dominic Cruz and even Conor McGregor's footwork is great. Mike Tyson, people think he was flat-footed, but if you watch Mike Tyson's footwork, how he changes, he's got fast feet and changed the angles to get his power. I think footwork is the biggest thing in both mixed martial arts and in boxing. That's where it starts. And when I was working with Brendan, that's what I concentrated on the most, get moving his feet. And that's the least what my trainers, that's what I mean when I said I would have done things different, is that what I tell pro is none of my trainers ever worked on my footwork when I was amateur they did, but as a pro, never worked on my footwork. You know, so but that's I think the most important thing. Foot defense is the best defense.
Hey Tony, just to take you back, one question just before we keep going on with a little bit of boxing, just your business side. Box and Burn, who came up with the name?
So when we started Box and Burn, we had the actor Mickey Rourke. He was going to be an investor in it.
Yeah.
That was before the name. And then we had another guy who was working with it as well, and we tried to think of names for ages. And he said, "What about Boxing and Burning?" And I was like, "Nah, let's keep the ING out and put the N in, Box and Burn." So that's where I came up with.
Yeah.
But it's a great name, right?
Yeah, it's a fantastic name.
People like the name.
We're not going to disagree with you.
It's very, you know, unique. I've never heard that one before, so it's good.
You know what? Actually, there's a Box and Burn in Australia.
Oh, shit.
There is, because if you do the hashtag Box and Burn on Instagram, I mean, we up there all the time, but if you find another one, there's a Box and Burn somewhere in Australia. I don't think they copied of us. I think
they
just thought about it as well.
Please tell me you trademarked it.
Oh, yeah, we've got a trademark on it. And then as well, inside of Box and Burn, we've got classes called Box and Fit, and then we've got, like, Kick and Box, so we're kind of using that same thing.
Where do you see you and your business partner, Kevin, like, the vision now for Box and Burn? You know, the growth's been incredible over the last 2 or 3 years. Have you guys sat down and had a good think about where you guys want to be in kind of 5 years?
Yeah, we often, like, lately we are doing that, and it's like with the academy, the education side, I think, well, I'm putting a lot of my time and energy into that. And with Kevin as well, he's working a lot on the two facilities that we've got. We're looking to open a new facility in West Hollywood. See, we get asked all the time.
Yeah.
All the time about, can we get a franchise? Can we get an affiliate with you? And we've never been ready to do that. We've even been asked about from Australia a few times as well to do that. And we've always said, not right now, because we're not ready. We don't just want to give someone a Box and Burn affiliate to make a quick few grand. We want to keep the quality very high, you know what I mean? So I think in the future, our education program is going to really grow. We're currently creating the online certification program, so people can do it online. And then, hopefully we get to the point where we can affiliate our brand out there and our Box and Burn gyms and our Box and Burn classes. So that'll be probably the ultimate goal. I mean, ideally, we'd be able to build a business up to a $500 million business and sell it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be nice, but I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, so some of my favorite things to do is go to old school boxing videos, watching some of the old fights. I grew up boxing at like 7 years old in my hometown, and I like, you know, we would talk about Sugar Ray Leonard, watching him fight. Diego Corrales was one of my favorites, Arturo Gatti. Do you have, who are some of your favorite fighters?
I think Roy Jones was in his prime was my favorite fighter. So entertaining. Like Roy Jones and Prince Nazim Hamid. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He'd do the crazy over the ring.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Prince Nazim, he was one of my favorites. Entertaining people like that. Then I liked Oscar De La Hoya in his day. You know, that was it. But to tell you the truth, I'm not that big of a boxing fan. Like, I never really used to watch it that much, unless it was one of my friends fighting. I think that came down to, as an amateur boxer, I was in tournaments. With me being a big kid, I would always be fighting last. And I would be there watching 50 fights at a time before my fight. So I watched thousands and thousands of fights, and I just got sick of watching them. So unless it was someone like Roy Jones or Prince Nazim, Oscar De La Hoya, or Mayweather, you know, I would never have really watched it.
Yeah. Tony, it's really interesting you brought up Prince Nazim because, you know, he fought as a featherweight at 57 kilos, and just seeing his transition away from boxing, you know, the guy's like 95 kilos. So obviously he's not really looking after himself outside of sport. Was that transition for yourself when you retired, did you face any of the similar problems?
I did. Because, see, the thing is with fighting, I think a lot of fighters do that, not as much as he does. He did, or Ricky Hatton was the same. He's the same.
Yeah.
Is when you're fighting, you're dieting all the time. You're trying to drop weight, you're trying to lose weight. So the second you can eat, you eat and drink twice as much as you would have if you were dieting all the time. You know? So that's what happened with me. I mean, especially when I retired, I got fat, I'll start drinking loads. And then I can't control it a little bit now. But I'm still like 30 pounds, which is about 15 kilo heavier than I was when I was fighting. But that's, you know, what I was making weight. But I look all right, but I'm not like Nazim. But yeah, I think that happens to most fighters because the last thing I wanted to do after I finished fighting was start training and keeping fit. Because you've got this motivation as a fighter that your opponent's working out, are you going to be fighting this guy? Such a motivation when you haven't got, for me personally, when I've not got that motivation that I'm going to fight someone, it's hard to get the motivation to actually to work out and eat right.
Tony, what about the identity side of it? You know, because you won a bronze medal, you know, you were like a bit of a celebrity up where you lived. Once it was taken away from you, did you go into maybe like a depression or did you struggle mentally with that sort of side of things?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and it's a big thing. Like, because like you said, I was well known. I would walk on the street, get pictures with everyone. Restaurants would be giving me free shit. Everyone would be wanting me to open shops because I was the first Olympian from Sunderland, so it was a pretty big deal.
Yeah,
where I was from, and then I was on live TV all the time, so I was in the spotlight. And then as soon as that comes away, it's hard. You know, because that's not there anymore. You're just a regular Joe, and you're back the way you were. So it was hard, but it's something you've got to deal with. And I was at the level where some of these bigger celebrities are, like soccer players, footballers. We call them footballers, absolutely. Well, footballers or basketballers or whoever, they are at a different level than me. And, you know, with the Floyd, maybe with the fight, even though Floyd is a completely different animal to what I was, like famous. He will have lost some of the retention that he was getting because he retired from boxing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little part of the reason why he wants to be in the spotlight, you know? And because you do, you enjoy being in the spotlight. So it was tough, but I got over it. I got over it now.
Just one question before we hit the personality round, Tony. I saw we're going to have Ben Greenfield on in a couple of weeks. And I saw that you were doing some biohacking stuff with him. So I just wanted to see what it was all about and what you learned from Ben.
Yeah, Ben Greenfield, great guy. He's come to work out with me a few times in the gym, and he invited me up to his house to do a podcast at his place, and he was just showing me all sorts of crazy shit. I didn't even know I don't even know what it was, but because it's Ben Greenfield, and everyone trusts Ben Greenfield, right?
Yeah.
He put this mad thing on me, and I put stick something up my nose, and it was supposed to be helping my brain. But yeah, I mean, his house is absolutely amazing. Like, everything in his house is kind of for your body to have upper performance. Like, the water that runs through his taps is from wells that's all filtered. The temperature of his house is at the perfect temperature for your body to breathe. He's got this fresh air coming through the house. He's got an infrared sauna. He's got a plunge pool outside. You know, it's funny because when we got to his house, he said, "All right, boys, I'll show you around that. I'll show you around the place. And then we're going to work out." And his place where he lives on like 10 acres of land.
Yeah.
And he said, "All right, put your bikes down. Let's go." And he started running with his two sons, started running around his garden, his big acre of land, like a jungle. And he had mad obstacle courses. We were climbing up walls. We were crawling under barbed wire. We were picking up spears, throwing them, carrying bricks, carrying his kids, and it was just fucking mad. And then from there, we got a plunge pool. And then he showed us, like, he's in his house as well, he's got, like, an allotment. Do you call it allotment in Australia, an allotment?
No.
Where it's, like, it's a garden where he grows his own vegetables. He had goats and before he gets his milk.
Oh, wow.
Everything's
they call it a veggie really patch, I think.
What you say, mate?
They call it a veggie patch, I think, in Australia.
Yeah, the veggie patch and a veggie patch. He had everything, like, was absolutely amazing. And his wife went 5 miles on the bike to go and pick some berries for our dessert. Like, everything was proper organic. And yeah, I mean, Ben Greenfield is a very interesting and extraordinary person. And I'm sure I've been listening to your podcast and all, but if I'm going to listen to it, and if you're listening to this and you haven't listened to that podcast yet, go and listen to Vision Board podcast with Ben Greenfield, because I'm sure it was a great show, right?
No, it's coming up. It's coming up in a couple of weeks.
Oh, it is? I'm sure it will be great.
Yeah.
Because I recorded one with me and it was fantastic, you know, because that's what he's into, biohacking, doing things to your body where it'll make you perform better. And, I mean, my biohack, what I do every single morning is a cold shower. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I have. That's tough. Yeah, work. You're a boxer, man. That's probably something you need.
I do it every day.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I do 10 minutes of the dry sauna and then a cold.
Nah, he means wake up and have a cold shower.
Oh, I do the cold shower. Like, I finish on the cold shower though, but not the first thing in the morning.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. You get the cold showers. I do it first thing in the morning. I get up and even before I breakfast anything, I get straight in that cold shower for like 3 minutes.
Jesus.
And that is amazing. It's amazing. It's hard at first, but you probably start to get used to it after a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Do you see the back in the day the Choke documentary with Hickson?
No.
Tell me about that. So in the mid '90s, Hickson Gracie was they followed him to Japan, getting ready for one of the MMA tournaments, and it shows Hickson doing yoga in an ice river. Like, and he was like one of these, you should YouTube, it's on YouTube, but he's been practicing stuff like that. He's a legend, man, Hickson Gracie. But yeah, the documentary is called Choke. You could watch it on YouTube.
Oh, I'll see that. Yeah, it's amazing. Have you heard of a guy called Wim Hof?
Oh yeah, the Iceman.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Iceman. I went to one of his seminars before about all the breathing and all that. And then I downloaded his app and it tells you that about the cold showers. That's where I first heard about it. But then I start Googling the benefits of cold showers and like, there's so many benefits to it.
Yeah.
So many benefits. Especially if I'm not depressed, but if you're depressed and feeling down, and the reason for that is because you're kind of challenging yourself and you're accomplishing a challenge, which is getting in the cold. So mentally, it makes you feel better about yourself. So if you're depressed, if you're ever feeling down, it might sound crazy, but go and jump in a cold shower.
It'll
really change your life.
Do you get any warm shower at all? Like, is it 3 minutes just straight? Because it's pretty cold here. It's winter in Australia. I'm a baby.
No, I never do that. I just like cold. But people see you start off real warm and then put it cold. But I just get in there, mate.
Straight in.
Man it out.
Right.
Yeah, and get angry. Like, fucking come on, I can do this. Get angry at myself.
I'm going to have to man up then. So, we've hit the personality part. Johnny's got the first question, man.
All right, Tony. We just need to give our listeners some advice on when you're having bad days.
Ooh, I've just said that one. If you're having bad days, get a cold shower. That'll really sort your shit out and make you feel bad.
Yes, sir.
Short and simple. All right, Tony, we're going to take you back to your childhood. What posters did you have on your child bedroom wall growing up, man?
Oh, listen, listen. I used to have posters of flash cars and then women with big tits.
There you go.
So English.
Yep, the Englishman. So, Tony, if...
English is...
Yes, sir. Yeah. If three of your best friends were sitting at a table and you weren't in the room, what sort of things would they be saying about you?
That I'm crazy and should we do what he's asking us to do or not? Because it might not work. Because I'm always trying to challenge them and do, let's do this, let's do this. I want everyone in my circle to succeed the best they can. And the thing is, like, I keep telling them to take risks and to do this and I advise them as best I can. So we'll probably be saying, he's fucking crazy. Should we do it or should we not do it?
All right, Tony Jeffries, final question. You're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites. Now, only rules, no family or friends, but it can be anyone, dead or alive. Who are you inviting?
Wow, listen, that one. I was going to say Mike Tyson, but no, he's too crazy. We don't know what he would get. Although I know Conor McGregor, I would bring Conor McGregor because he's a funny guy. And then I would bring comedians and athletes like Jimmy Carr. Is he famous in Australia? I don't know if you know him.
Jimmy Carr, no.
Jimmy Carr, Peter Kay. These are all English guys. Yeah, and then... Yeah, like David Beckham, I think he would be a great one. And the best comedian in the world, Aussie, Jim Jeffries.
Oh, yeah. He's absolutely hilarious.
No relation?
Yeah, I love Jim Jeffries, so I'll get him over there as well. I'll be at least 5.
No relation to you, Tony?
No, he's not. He's not. That's how I actually found him, through the names the same as my name, but he's not. But he lives in LA now, so I'm trying to get him on my podcast. That'd be great.
All right. Before we let you go, Tony, I want everyone following Tony. He's got a great podcast, Box and Life Podcast. You can find him online, www.boxandburn.com. Go do yourself a workout there. I heard it's one of the best in the business. Or you can find him also on his personal website, www.tonyjeffries.com. Facebook, it's a great name, Olympian.tony. Twitter, Tony_Jeffries. And YouTube and Instagram, Tony Jeffries. Tony, it's been an absolute pleasure, my man.
Nice one, boys. Thank you for having me on. And if any of your people's personal trainers, you have to tell them about the Boxing Burn Academy. If you come to Australia next year, to come and get certified and learn how to teach boxing.
Definitely, Tony. We appreciate you stopping by. When you come down to Sydney, contact Tristan and myself, man. We'll definitely get along.
We will. Thank you for that, boys. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Johnny, Tony Jeffries, man.
Dude, that was awesome. I've learned one thing from him. He likes the Aussies. And he doesn't really care too much about the Yanks. No, it's a good guy, man. I love the... it's always these...
It's that banter. Yeah. I know what he's saying.
Oh, like, for
those
sure.
Those English boys, like... You think Australians are crazy? Like, UK boys take it to another level.
All my friends are Brits. Mark, Kieran, they're savages.
Like some of the things they put each other up to. Yeah. Like,
these are your friends that you guys listen in the morning. You look at your buddies and you go... You've ashamed me. Yes. I can't believe he did that. But that's
yes.
And it's the athlete.
You're naked right now. Yeah. You're naked right now. It's,
why do you have a sock on? You're only wearing a sock. Dude, yeah. We're in public right now. My mother's here. So like, but it's locker room banter. He's a fighter. Also, one of my favorite things is the dichotomy between a combat athlete who was very successful, Olympian, huge amateur career, and the successful business mindset he has. Just leave
Jesus
it.
Jesus Christ.
That's the shit Tristan and I had to overcome this whole episode. The building is under siege.
I think we might be the only two people in the building. I don't know who talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So, sorry to the more getting away from the banter of the English boys. And, yeah, we had some great learning points. So I learned a lot from Tony. Probably the biggest thing, you know, he's pretty old school in terms of I'm sure that, you know, the whole social media scene is growing and everyone's learning how to use it and things like that. But I think he made some great points about – you know, just being in it and creating something for the people who are there in front of you right now. Do you know what I mean? And I think people sometimes get caught up in having to do things on social media when the biggest thing they can do is right in front of them. And that is to create something really good for the people
the customers or the clients, whatever they've got in front of them.
Yeah, good quality content. It doesn't have to be flashy. Like when he said that.
No, I mean, I don't even mean content. I mean, like, for example, we could probably use us as a perfect example. It's that, and it happens a lot in the fitness industry, is that, you know, social media is huge, but sometimes we forget to give 100% in front of us is our clients. Do you know what I mean? Like the ability to over-service and overproduce for them should be our number one priority, not overproduce and over deliver for people we don't even know on our social media.
So you're saying, yeah, I'm kind of confused. What do you mean?
Like, for example, we're both about to go do sessions for our clients. Some people would prioritize having to do a post on Facebook instead of prioritizing that customer service experience for that person that's just about to be in front of us. And I think that was a main point that I got from Tony, is that the reason why Box and Burner has got so big is that they've put such an emphasis into making that experience for their people just so good.
Yeah, I like also the point he made, though, when he was able to identify the importance of outsourcing and the importance of hiring people in so he could take less time on the things he wasn't good at and more time on his strengths. And when he used that little reference about he was doing the digital marketing and he really wasn't that good at it and he didn't want to spend money outsourcing, but the minute he did, he started getting money more back in.
Yeah, man.
I think that's kind of a fear we all have as small business owners of, like,
it's just smart business. It's a fear of having to give up control. But the thing is that he could probably pay someone $20 to take an hour off him that he could make $100 or $200 back into the business. So it's a smart business move on his part. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's but you have to have a lot of faith in the people around you when you're putting money out, especially when you're getting started doing that specific thing, outsourcing, jobs to people that you're paying that you used to do when you're not used to getting, you know, the investment or return, especially off jump. Now, as time goes and you start seeing the return coming in, it's a little easier to outsource. But that initial moment, I think, is very important. He said when he started doing that, he started getting more money coming in. It reminds me of Pollock when he was talking about when he started giving more out, he was getting everything more in return. That was a huge take-home point for me. Give more to get more, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And Gary Vee does it very well. He doesn't charge for any of his content. He puts a lot of free content, doesn't ask for anything in return.
The more we do this, the more initially I didn't really know how to take Gary, but I'm glad you brought him up. He does. You never see him he's never selling anything. He's never flossing money at you. Mm. He's literally coming from a place of empathy for wanting people to see how hard work gets you to a certain place. But you never see him with Ferraris, some of these other guys that we may have spoken to. And that's a good point. Like, it has to come from a good place.
Yeah. I think he's the number one content producer in the world because he never tries to sell you something.
Yeah, that's huge.
Never tries to sell you something. I think that's why I read a post by him yesterday. Like, he is really intent on that legacy thing.
Yeah.
And he just really wants to be remembered. And I think he will be, because I think a lot of his content will be relevant still in years to come. And the fact that he doesn't push anything on anyone, I think is good, especially when you think about the profile that he's got. So
yeah, it's a huge thing, man. It gets kind of frustrating when you click on your social and my 12-week program, buy this, buy that, buy that. It's like, dude, everybody, please calm down, take a step back. Who are we doing this for?
Exactly.
And Gary's doing it to help people, and that should be your intent.
Well, yeah, I think you made a great point without even thinking about it. That 12 weeks that you just said, like, you got to be wanting to be in someone's life more than 12 weeks, right?
Yeah, dude. Like, oh, so you just give me a doormat? A doorbell, just press and go, and then move on. Next one, next. That frustrates me sometimes.
Yeah, the solution of just 12 weeks, I don't think that creates...
There's a start and stop to that. You know what I mean?
Happens after that 12 weeks? Like, they go back to their old habits? Like, does that mean if they don't pay you again, you don't talk to them anymore?
And what about the relationship? So you're going to just put the whole relationship under the umbrella of a time? You know what I'm saying? Like, these aren't people. They're just time. And then it's just, here's my bank account details. Like... That whole intent, like you said, you know, Tony doing it to educate the young coaches and create a product for the people, Gary creating content to create a legacy with the intent of helping people.
I think everyone does. You do it. I do it. Same thing. It's just like, I never ask for anything in return. If you want to follow, I think you can get a lot of good things out of the Vision Board podcast. I'm sure that the different series that we're running on our own, depending on like what your interests are, I think you can get a lot of that as well. And we're not asking for anything in return at all.
We're just trying to develop, help people, learn, share, spread the message of positivity, and, man, spread the message of creating something that speaks to you or speaks to your business partner, and then support each other. We're trying to build a community here. We're trying to build a positive family here with the Vision Board. And I think it shows. That's why people are so willing. You know, we got an email, a message last night, and he compared us to the Switzerland of the fitness industry. And I called you. He was like, you guys just seem to get along with everybody. I want to be a part of that. And then I messaged you, and I didn't know how to take that. I was like, what have we started here?
Yeah, it's like, just nice. It was really nice. Connecting with some brilliant people.
It hit me on a different level. I wasn't expecting to.
Been very, very lucky to connect with some great people that have educated us.
It starts with you.
Introduced us to a lot of great people as well, like meeting some absolute idols of ours. You know, we had the opportunity to spend some time with Joe DeFranco and Jada Ferrugia.
Shout out to Rob Whitaker, man. Mad love, dude. The kid deserves it. He invited you and me into his home at the time, a single apartment. We met Jack, his little son, and his wife.
Sophia, yeah.
And he deserves all people. He deserves all the good things.
Worked so hard, man.
Australian's first UFC champion, Robert Whitaker, man. Jump on board now because that train is moving.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a champion
for a long time. We called that. We were driving away from his place, and we did the wrap-up in your car. And we were predicting when it would happen. I think we both said this coming November. We didn't expect it this soon. I listened to it again. We thought that it would be in a couple months when he would be the champ.
Yeah.
But, you know, we knew he'd be a champ.
He's a true champ, and he's done it going through everyone.
Yeah.
That's what I really appreciate.
Look at that resume.
His resume is the best.
Yeah, and he's done it the right way, and he's only 26, and the kid's head on his shoulders, and he's very marketable. And you were the one telling me about the endorsements. And, man, it feels good.
He deserves it, man.
Yeah,
and he gets a lot of respect from the UFC community. Like, I spoke to Tim Kennedy the other day, and Tim goes, I asked Tim, I go, if you were ever still a contender in this division, who do you see as the top five? And he said Bisping. He said Rockhold, Whittaker, Jacare, Brunson, and Romero. What's the common denominator out of all of that?
Yeah, he's fought all of them.
He's fought all of them but Rockhold.
Yeah.
And Bisping's to come.
Yeah.
Like, that is a true resume.
Murderer's Row.
Yeah.
Fought everyone.
That is crazy.
Yeah, man.
All right, guys. Next week, we got Chris Algieri coming back on the show. We've had a bit of a delay. I'm not sure if we said last week that Dom D'Agostino was coming on. Unfortunately, he had to do a presentation this week. So it's been delayed a couple of weeks, but he is still coming back on. Next week, we've got a couple of – it's going more towards that nutrition route. We've had Chris on before. We're talking more about his career. It's time we want to bring Chris back on because he's highly involved with the ISSN, does a lot of stuff for nutrition for a lot of the combat sports and professional athletes. I think it's going to be really intriguing to just really see the stuff that he does on his own body and the body of others.
Stoked to bring him on. Keto.
Yeah. Also got Fit Man Cook on. So Fit Man Cook, he is, if you jump on YouTube, he's got one of the best nutrition in terms of he does all these recipes and he's done it for years and years and years. His creativity for healthy meal eating is probably the best I've ever seen on YouTube. So it's going to be interesting. His name is Kevin. He's actually from Dallas, Texas, and he's a guy that I pick up a lot of food ideas from. He's quite, like I said, very creative when you think about all the different, and he's, you know, we were speaking obviously Tony Gaskins last week about he loves his Southern food. This guy makes like really healthy Southern food. It's interesting.
It's really about the fine details with nutrition, man. You got to really find what works for you, what you're sensitive to, and find a nice little system. But yeah, you can't be frying things no matter what. You can't be frying things and expecting results.
That's true. Guys, Johnny, before we go, social media.
Yeah, guys, continue to follow me, Johnny Stofko, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Go to my new YouTube channel now, Johnny Stofko. Hit the red subscribe button. I love you for it.
Okay, guys, I am Tristan Cannell across all mine. Hit me up on any of the socials, Johnny as well. And if you have any guest requests or any feedback from the show today or any shows, just send them through to our email address, info@thevisionboardpodcast.com.
Get involved, guys. We love you.
Johnny, I'll check you next week, brother.
Tristan, be good player.
All right, my man.
Peace.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and, you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast.
via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.